Welcome, everyone. This is all about Windows Phone Insight Podcast 194, recording this on Tuesday, the 27th of September, 2016. I'm Steve Litchfield, and after a short break in which Rafe and I were kept busy with various things, I have Rafe Blanford.
Yes, hello, everybody. We've had a kind of two-week break on the podcast. Part of that was because we didn't think there was loads of news to talk about, and also we had busy schedules, both of us. But it's rather come back to haunt us, because I think we've got quite a few items to get through this week. We're going to whip through them. There's been some really interesting content on the site, which I know everyone's been looking at, because they've been commenting on it. It's some of our busiest content. I think whenever Steve does his camera heads-to-heads, that's always sparking debate. But also some various tidbits coming through. So I should probably stop waffling, Steve, and let us get on with some of the content for the podcast.
Yeah, well, I threw in quite a few articles with the magic key phrase iPhone 7 in the title, but of course guarantees us traffic and hits and controversy.
But, yes, how distressing.
I also threw in a female nude just to try and get the traffic up, but that didn't seem to work too well. It was one of the exhibits in my photo comparison article.
Yes, gentle listener, if you're wondering about that and haven't read the article, it is in fact a very fine piece of statuary, I can't even pronounce that, a sculpture, shall we say, rather than what you might be thinking.
Indeed. Anyway, moving on, there are quite a few stories to get through, Rafe, and I just wanted to your take on a few of them. Let's start with disappearing Lumias. People have been saying for quite a while, and I'm sure they're absolutely right, in their neck of the woods, part of the world, that some of the Lumias, the 650, 950 and 950 XL, are becoming rarer to find, either in shops, in the carriers, or indeed from the official Microsoft stores. Now, obviously, I couldn't check every single shop and carrier in the world, but I did go around most of the major Microsoft online stores in the various markets. And if you look at the table in my article, you can see that green, obviously, is both colours of each model available. Red means out of stock or not available for some reason, or pre-order, which seems rather crazy a year after launch. And white means basically that you get one of the other colours, either white or black. So looking at that table, Rafe, and I'm covering regions as far off as, well, as exotic as South Africa, Finland, Australia, Russia, France, Spain, Germany, of course, UK and USA. I would say it's still possible to find most of the late 2015, 2016 Lumias in most places, but there does seem to be a bit of a pattern that they are gradually going out of style, as it were. Do you think that Microsoft has pitched it about right, so that by 2017 they'll be down to just the last few in the warehouses?
It's difficult to know, because honestly, this is a case of reading the tea leaves with one hand tied behind your back. because, you know, obviously Microsoft are also winding down the operations more generally. So I think some of the stock levels might just be reflective of the way they're maybe switching over distribution or something like that, rather than, you know, having categorically run out. I suspect, you know, they are sort of using a back stock of devices, but it wouldn't surprise me if there's still a bit of manufacturing going on in some cases for some of these handsets. I mean, we know very little about the sales numbers. I mean, we do know they've dropped off significantly. You can see that in the Microsoft results and in some of the industry tracking. But in some markets, actually, you know, they're still selling to some degree. And actually, even in somewhere like the UK, I think it's about 5% now. Now, that's, you know, obviously down from the sort of historic highs where it sort of crept up, you know, above 10%. But actually, that tells me it's still selling in some numbers. And you see some of them in the shops. And actually, one of the things is, of course, there's less of the low-end devices. So, you know, they've kind of gone. And I wonder whether the high ones are sort of still selling at a similar level. Really difficult to tell. I mean, my suspicion would be actually kind of sales and stock has fallen just as kind of a matter of course, and they're less readily available. And it, you know, it does seem that some of those main markets, you know, UK, US, things are still broadly available, or there's available through operators, case in the UK. Some of the other markets, particularly some of the fringe market, it wouldn't surprise me if things are kind of less fluid in distribution terms. So honestly, I don't think there's much you can read into this. Noticeable that the 650, which is of course the most recently announced, is very readily available. It's also the most affordable of the handsets. And of course, we have seen the 950 and the 950 XL come down in cost to the extent that actually, you know, size aside, actually the 950 XL is probably, you know, the biggest bang for your buck when you consider kind of some of the few little extras you get with it, and, yeah. and people always seem, I guess, bigger as better. So we're also looking at a sample from kind of Microsoft country-specific sites, and that may not be a reflection of where people usually buy the handsets in those markets. In fact, typically, yeah. Actually, the sales through the Microsoft stores are very small indeed, with perhaps the exception of the UK and the USA, where they have built up a bit more of a brand for themselves.
Yeah, I was kind of thinking that, not necessarily trying to cover the entire market, but thinking that if Microsoft themselves had run out of a handset, that was probably a bad sign.
That's a fair comment, although, of course, some of these stores are run on behalf of Microsoft by someone else. They're not always sort of completely within the Microsoft chain. I think the exception for that is certainly in the USA and possibly the UK as well. But I wouldn't be surprised if some of the other stores are actually run by others, or, you know, the fulfillment is at least done by someone else. And of course, they may not have quite the same motivation, shall we say, to keep things in stock.
Yeah, yeah. I did notice, I mean, people have been saying for a while about Microsoft redundancies and closing factories, et cetera, across the world, and dismantling some of Nokia's distribution and manufacturing network. But I wanted to just comment, Rafe, with your industry knowledge of the trend really towards, rather than people making their own phones, having OEMs make them for them. Now, we've seen this for a decade or two, really, with the likes of HTC rising to prominence as one of the best-known OEMs. Original equipment manufacturers, and also, of course, Foxconn in recent years with the iPhone. I'm wondering, what happens, Ray? Let's say that the last dedicated Lumia 950 factory line actually run by Microsoft had closed. Presumably, the mouldings and the designs and the specs and the components, they could just basically be assembled by a contract OEM in China or wherever. It's just the fact that a factory has closed doesn't necessarily mean that a model could not be made anymore.
That's absolutely right. I mean, it's fair to say actually a lot of the manufacturing process and who does what is quite opaque. Trying to work out who exactly builds which phone isn't always clear cut. I mean, even someone like Apple uses multiple suppliers, and, you know, other manufacturers, you will see a mix of kind of what's effectively them being built in their own factories, and some other models will be done by OEM partners. HTC, I believe, is actually an example of that now, with them building their own high-end handset themselves, but actually outsourcing some of the manufacturing for other handsets. In terms of Microsoft, yes, absolutely possible. And it's also worth bearing in mind, of course, that most of these factories haven't necessarily closed. They've been handed on to someone else. And that's the case, obviously, with some of the ex-Nokia factories. We know some of those have gone to Foxconn, for example. And so in that case, it's even easier because, you know, it could just become a contract arrangement. And that's becoming increasingly common. You know, time was when every manufacturer had their own factory. These days, as you say, it's much more common to see it being outsourced, and obviously Apple were, you know, the big example of that, but there's plenty of others too. And actually, one of Nokia's advantages always held up to be its fantastic kind of factory and logistics chain. I don't think anyone has maintained that in quite the same way. And so, you know, there are a lot more suppliers, a lot more moving parts involved now. And so, yeah, it's absolutely possible. I mean, this idea that you could run out of stock, it's absolutely possible if Microsoft wanted to get some more devices made, especially in the time frame that we're talking about. You know, if you go a little bit further forward, it's possible that certain components could run out or not be available in quite the same quantity. But in terms of the production runs we're talking about, I can't really imagine that affecting the Lumia devices.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's move on to another of the story's features. I was comparing the iPhone 7 Plus in hand, by the way. I had both the iPhones here for review. The HP Elite X3 seemed the best one to pitch against it. Now, obviously, I like comparing devices between different platforms, and people seem to like them too, judging from the comments. And it was tempting to go for the Lumia 950 XL because that's well known and it's been out. But it's been out there for a while. The Elite X3 is newer and does have the higher-end chipset. Just for a change, I wanted to pitch that against the brand new larger sized iPhone, which instantly I was quite impressed by. If you look at the table, Rafe, which is, and we'll cover some of the points in the table in a minute, but the overall, I had to give the win to the iPhone, which seems a bit strange for a Windows site to give a win to an iPhone, but you really have to be impressed by what Apple has done with these new devices in terms of adding the speakers and that 2x zoom telephoto lens, which maybe we'll come to in a moment. But the Elite X3 is the highest spec, arguably, device in the Windows world in terms of chipset. I think the fact that it wasn't quite ready in terms of updates and firmware, although that is now out as we record this, it appeared overnight across the world. The fact that it wasn't quite ready, I think, probably affected the score slightly and affected my impressions. My gut feel is that the score would be more level if the X3 was at full operating temperature, as it were. But I'd be interested in your comments as we work down the table, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing here, and just as a general comment on these comparison pieces, people quite rightly say it can be a bit misleading just to add up the score, because there is no real weighting in here. And so, for example, something like the price, which will favour the Elite X3, for some people that's not going to matter, especially given that both of these we're talking £700 or £819. But for something like the ecosystem, that might be the single most important factor when people buy a phone. But talking about the price, yes, the Elite X3 wins there. The dimensions of form factor, I think people will probably give the nod to the iPhone in that kind of design terms. But actually, there's something to be said about the durability on the X3 in terms of kind of some of the drop tests and obviously the shock absorption on the plastics and things like that. I mean, you gave the X3 the win there. I'd probably agree with that. The operating system, I mean, this is one where I'd probably give the nod to iOS 10. I mean, you quite rightly in this comparison sort of said it depends on what you want for the average consumer, though. The display one kind of caught my attention because you actually gave it to the X3, and in terms of connectivity, that's fair enough, because that's just about specifications. Real world, people aren't going to see a lot of difference between them. But the screen, what was your thinking behind that?
Well, larger is better, really, in terms of you can see more content. I know the iPhone's display is gorgeous. I mean, the IPS, the full RGB stripe, rather, it's not pentile. But it is 5.5 inches and 1080p, and that just starting to feel a little low. I know you don't see that in the interface, and you don't really feel it with the games and even watching media. But if you actually compare the two, to go from one is being 1080p with, quote, ion strengthened glass, to one which is a full 6-inch QHD, i.e. 1440p, and Gorilla Glass 4, and it's AMOLED, which people know I love, the richness of the AMOLED colours. I felt the X3 had to win. I agree it's a close call. People love the iPhone screen, and it's a great screen, but the X3 screen, in theory, should be better.
Yeah, and I think this is a case of where kind of the pure specs win out, and the experience, there's little to choose between them. I mean, the iPhone 7 is kind of well-regarded as having one of the best screens on a smartphone. But yes, if you're looking for size, there's a debate to be had here. Yeah. So I think that one's pretty close. The connectivity, as we've all commented, is fair enough. The processor, I think this is the really interesting one in one sense, because the Apple A10 and with its sort of associated RAM, I mean, as we've commented before, kind of the absolute speed and the benchmarks don't mean all that much. But I think if you take that kind of X factor of how does it feel, what's that gut feel, definitely the X3 and certainly its previous firmware did feel a bit laggy, which was really appalling, given that Windows 10 Mobile and Windows Phone before it have a reputation for being pretty smooth and for having good performance even on very limited hardware. And that just smacks of poor integration. So Apple has to take the win here, and actually I think this is one of the really big factors outside of kind of apps and the ecosystem, because it's really the effect of how does it feel to use this every day. So yeah, fair enough. On the capacity side of things, I mean, I feel like going 128 GB is surely enough for anybody. but yes, having the expandable memory, it's something that Apple has been criticized for in the past. Looking down things like the imaging, particularly the stills and the video, rightly, you give it to the iPhone. And I think that's a really big, big difference. Similarly for music and multimedia and navigation, as we start to move into kind of the service apps and the things like that. What I take from all of that is I think it's important to note that the iPhone wins in the categories that are going to be really important to consumers. The things like that overall performance, the imaging, some of the service, and obviously the big one around the ecosystem. Where the X3 kind of wins is almost by putting its nose ahead on specification. And it feels like a lot of this debate is very... It kind of makes me recall the Android versus iPhone debates in the early days, where Android typically adopted new high spec things just that little bit quicker than the iPhone. And actually, if you look at the core specs of the iPhone, in some ways, relatively unimpressive, but it is the overall experience. And that's what really tells here, which is why I think, you know, actually, probably this could have been a further apart in the final scoring than it actually was. But it was interesting to see things like battery life, you know, particularly with the iPhone. There's been some controversy around that this time round. You know, even things like the cloud age, where you'd expect Microsoft to be stronger because of its kind of history there. You know, no, actually, Apple wins it there. And, you know, the biometrics, we got pretty excited about the X3 having both the kind of you know, fingerprint and the iris recognition. But actually, it comes back to do one thing well. That's what Touch ID does, particularly on the newest generation of that. The big one, of course, applications ecosystem. So, I mean, I think it's fair to actually put these two devices up against each other, because you're quite right to say they're kind of the latest and greatest from each of the respective platforms. But it's also, to me, shows up how much Microsoft and previously Nokia added to these devices in order to get them into that finished experience. And that's something that HP is missing. And that's arguably because they've focused on this as an enterprise device, but also because I just think they have, you know, less experience and they've got less resources to bring to bear. But, you know, camera is a really great example. You know, if we were seeing Nokia or Microsoft continue to develop and push their camera technology, I suspect that the latest flagship there would, you know, beat out even the iPhone 7 Plus with its, you know, great innovations. For the first time, we're seeing a flagship from Apple actually win in more categories, and therefore, you know, that's actually reflected in the final score. And you've had it 9-6, but I suspect if we put some weighting on there would actually be a bigger difference.
Yeah, although, interestingly, if I was to put the Lumia 950 XL against the iPhone 7 Plus, maybe that should be my next article, because the 950 XL, with its current maturity and current updates and the camera that beats the 7 Plus, arguably, then that might actually be a closer match, even though the 950 XL is almost a year old, which is just bizarre. But this whole thing about scoring, Rafe, it's only a bit of fun. I do emphasise that in the text, really. You really can't give an ultimate verdict just on adding up a few table cells. Even these matches, which are across ecosystem, that they are just for interest, because if someone wants a top spec or Windows continuum ready smartphone, then they might consider the X3 because it's what they want. If they want an iPhone, they'll buy an iPhone and so forth. It's really just a bit of fun, and I think it was interesting, and judging from the comments, I think people thought it was interesting too.
Yeah, I mean, the thing I'd say here is that I think it's pretty obvious that the iPhone is the more popular option for the consumer, and I think both of us, if we were asked by a random passerby, would probably recommend the iPhone, budget aside and all of those other factors, just because it's kind of the popular choice and it's the sensible one. And we've talked about this on the podcast before. You know, there are still reasons to be in the Windows ecosystem, but, you know, it'd be very easy to just write this as a total mismatch. And actually, I think it probably is because of the maturity of the X3. That may change with the latest software update. But as you say, the 950 XL arguably, you know, gets a lot closer. And actually, that's testament in one sense to the fact that, you know, the changes we're seeing in smartphones, the pace almost slowed down a bit, or rather, you know, the improvements that we're seeing seem not to matter as most. And I've definitely seen more people, you know, it's an anecdote really, saying I'm not quite so bothered about upgrading to the latest iPhone or the latest and greatest Android phone, because what I've got, you know, does seem adequate. And certainly there is some evidence that the replacement cycle on phones is just starting to lengthen out a little bit now. Be interesting to see how that's borne out in the next year or two. But yeah, like you say, a bit of fun, and it's good to see these two phones being put up against each other.
And of course, the 950 XL famously is only £339 now, so that's only just over one third of what the iPhone 7 Plus costs. So again, kind of tongue-in-cheek, you putting the 950 XL against the iPhone, that really does look like a huge mismatch in terms of price, but there we go. I think the 950 XL is a cracking device, and if you're out there, you've got an older device like a 1520 even, although that's still a great device. If you've got a 930, 920, even a 1020, then get a 950 XL. It's so cheap these days, and the specification and the camera and the 5.7 inch screen is just glorious. I think the 950 XL is a cracking buy.
Yeah, it's definitely an underrated handset amongst the general public. The ecosystem is the thing that obviously won't go away. And I suspect there are still people screaming at this podcast right now going, I'd still have an iPhone. And if truth be told, if I was spending, you know, £600, I would probably plump for the iPhone myself. It's much more interesting when you bring that price in at sort of, you know, between £250 and £300. Because, of course, you do have to think about those value choices sometimes. And I guess the greedy amongst us will probably want to have our hands on both, because obviously the iPhone 7 Plus in particular, I think, does break some new ground for those who are really into that imaging things, which is maybe what we should talk about next, Steve.
Well, I was just going to mention that the owning an iPhone 7 Plus, or at least in my case, borrowing one, with that two-time zoom, it really gave me a flavour for zooming and imaging. And that, so the very fact I've got had a 7 Plus here in my hands has driven me back to my Lumia 1020. Which is now a three-year-old phone, and you just knew I was going to end up back there eventually. But I've got a feature coming up, Rafe, on using a Lumia 1020 on Windows Phone 8.1 in 2017. And I guess
that's a glutton for punishment, Steve.
We are, but you just know that I'm going to have fun doing it, and people are going to have fun reading it. So there we go. Moving on, just a bit of something different. I will come to Imagery, Rafe, but I want to just cover a few apps first. Audio Cloud, a new UWP, and there's been quite a few new Universal Windows Platform applications released in the last few weeks. This is a SoundCloud client, and I thought of you because I know you use SoundCloud quite a bit. I wondered if you had a chance to try this.
I haven't tried this out yet, but I've just been reading the review and thinking, I really need to try this. And for those that don't know, both the All About Windows Phone Insight podcast and the 361 podcast are actually hosted on SoundCloud. So it's another way to get hold of that. There's also, I think, just an increasingly large amount of content. So if you're looking particularly, you know, for a bit of free content that you want to try something a bit different, it's a really great way to explore it. And looking at this client, it's basically got everything you'd want for kind of doing both that discovery, but also that playback process, and managing to use all the kind of the metadata, particularly around kind of cover art, in a really, really attractive way, but also getting, you know, some of the unique features of SoundCloud, including kind of that when people are commenting on it and being able to see where they're commenting on an audio stream, which is always something I feel we kind of miss from podcasting, because typically people just comment about an episode. And it's a shame that thing hasn't caught on. I mean, that's just a Rafe wish for the future, I guess. But also the fact that it seems pretty full-featured in being able to access a lot of the kind of unique things about SoundCloud, I think is really great to see. Yeah, and yeah. Of course, being a UWP app, great. I can use it on my Surface device and on my phone.
And you can also use Bringcast, the new podcatcher. Now, we had a whole raft of podcatchers for Windows Phone 8.1. I think there were up to 20 at last count, which made a complete mockery of trying to review them all in one roundup article. We had to split it into two parts, each of 7,000 words, which just got crazy. But if I restrict myself to just UWP apps, i.e. applications built for Windows 10 from the ground up, and which also work on Continuum and on laptops and Surface and so forth, then there are only actually two or three. I've already covered Grover Pro in a previous podcast and article, but I now wanted to feature Bringcast, which has gone through about three new beta releases in the last 3 weeks. So the developer's pretty darn active, and he's also very responsive. So you fire a suggestion at him, and an email comes back saying, great idea, I'll do it tomorrow, or words to that effect. So I did a feature, Bringcast UWP. Have a look at the screenshots on that, Rafe. I know it's in my trademark chosen purple theme, but I do promise people that there are other themes available, and you can just switch them to the colour of your choice.
Yeah, there's no doubting this is an attractive application. And like you're saying, there's really no substitute for active development, particularly if you're kind of a fan of kind of the podcasting clients. And I know, Steve, you're quite picky about the things that you get in there. So presumably it's not just the fact that it's good, the fact that it's under active development, you know, yeah, gives a real sense of appeal.
Yeah, absolutely. And the biggest thing really is whether it's reliable in terms of in the background grabbing new podcasts for you to listen to. The absolute must for any podcatcher is that you wake up in the morning and you bring up the podcatcher screen, and it's showing, oh, four new episodes. Oh, there's a new 361 Degrees podcast, plug, to listen to. And it's there, ready downloaded. You don't have to wait while you grab it before you head off to your train. It's just there. It's been downloaded. The fuss is over, and you just get on with listening. And Bringcast does this very well.
Yeah, summed up for me as well. And as Steve said, there are options other than the very purple theme that he's chosen to showcase in the screenshots.
Yeah, I'm proud of that, because that was my suggestion back in the day. The developer asked about 3 years ago if anybody had any favourite colours he wanted to work into themes. I said, how about this one? And he loved it. So there we are. It's my fault. A third EWP I wanted to mention just before we move on, Skype Preview, which of course we've talked about before on this podcast, the reimagining of Skype, that one client network on phone, tablet, Surface, desktop, you name it, HoloLens, Xbox, and it's coming on pretty well. There are a few glitches, as we found when trying to set up this Skype call to record this podcast, but they've now added SMS Relay, Rafe, which I think is probably appeal to you more than me, because I use a Mac as my desktop, whereas you use Windows more than I do. Basically, you can now, if you're signed into Skype Preview on your Windows 10 Surface, for example, and on your Windows 10 mobile phone, you can now receive and send SMS text messages from your bigger screen.
Yeah, I mean, it's just one of these things that we've talked about in the past with Congenial, and there's certainly been options in the past. Mighty Phone was something I used to use, for example, and Apple have had this for a while. It's just such an obvious thing to be able to do that, you know, rather, you know, we've all been in that situation where you're working on something, your phone goes off, you know, it's a text message, you pick it up, you kind of get interrupted. Why not build it into the screen or the desktop that you're already using? And so, yeah, this SMS Relay is a really obvious one for me. The only thing I'd say is actually I don't use SMS as much as I used to, because now it all exists on the over-the-top messaging client. But actually I've got WhatsApp installed as an app on both a Windows and a Mac computer, and use that all the time. In fact, I probably use it almost as much from the desktop as I do on the phone itself.
Yeah,
The same would apply for this SMS Relay. Yeah, kind of can't believe it's taken this long in one sense.
Yeah. Now, Rafe, would you like a chuckle?
I would.
You know, we've been trying to get hold of this Acer Liquid Jade Primo for the last year.
Yes.
Yes. Well, I think you may have even had hands on it at various shows, but we've been pressing the PR companies and Acer, and please give us a review, hands that we want to review it for All About Windows Phone. And nothing at all, and I keep pressing nothing at all, until yesterday when I had an email from the PR lady saying, could they have their review handset back?
Ah.
Which is rather embarrassing for them, and it made me chuckle. I can't conceive of the incompetence which led to this. And there is a backstory, and the backstory is the fact that the old PR company basically was useless and got fired. And there's now a new PR company on the ball who are keen to actually get Jade Primos into people's hands. So hopefully, certainly in the next month, we should have one for review. I wanted to comment on the price, though, Rafe. I've put in the story there, linking across. It's now available for sale on the Microsoft site. And the price is, if I remember right, about £449, including VAT in the UK. I know that comes with a Continuum desktop, but if you look at the specs there, we're talking sub Lumia 950 XL pricing, specifications, and yet the price is £100 more. And I know the 950 XL started higher and didn't necessarily include the dock in all markets, so you could argue that this is newer, therefore it should be more expensive. But it's also got to make sense for people to buy it. Who on earth in October 2016 is going to buy the Jade Primo, even despite the presence of a dock, for £449, when you can get a 950 XL from Microsoft, and it's from the maker of the OS, and it's got higher specifications all round?
Yeah, I think it's honestly hard to find any defence for this, other than maybe you like the Acer brand more than the Microsoft or the Lumia brand. I think the Liquid Jade Primo had its shot sort of a year ago, when it would have been contemporaneous with the Lumia 950 and 950 XL. But now, a year on, you know, you just can't justify that pricing. You know, even when it was the equivalent pricing, it would be hard to recommend it, because of what we've talked about in the past with the kind of the what I'd describe as the first party versus the third party handsets.
Yeah.
I mean, I saw this a couple of times in person. You know, it was nice enough, but it wasn't anything to write home about. It didn't quite have that X3 sort of glamour that made it a little bit more interesting. That was both from a design and also a specification point of view. So it'll be interesting to see what you make of this when we do get the handset in for review. But I've got to imagine that the sales numbers on these are going to be pretty low, with the exception of maybe, you know, Acer cutting some deals with people who are buying a bunch of devices from them, you know, because obviously Acer do other things as well, and they maybe throw some of these in as well. This is why, you know, some people find it difficult to take the Windows platform seriously, because they see something like this and see, quite honestly, something that's overpriced and kind of late, and you really doubt the seriousness with which it's going to be treated.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, let's move on onto something more cheerful. I put another camera phone head-to-head together, this time the Lumia 950 against the Apple iPhone 7. This is not the 7 Plus with that two-time zoom lens, which I think is interesting. I think we talked about it in the last podcast. But this is the vanilla iPhone 7, which is basically a size match for the Lumia 950. So that's hence putting these two side by side. Apple do claim quite a few improvements for this latest 7 series, and I wanted to just see how it put together. I have to say the 950 still came out on top, and people probably won't be surprised about that. But in other parts of the online world, I've been praising the iPhone 7 camera, and rightly so, because I think it beats the Galaxy S7, in my opinion. I think Apple get the image processing exactly right, the white balance and the detail, and they don't over-sharpen things. The fact that it gets out-specced ultimately by the Lumia 950 perhaps shouldn't surprise people. The fact that the 950's triple LED flash is brighter than the quad LED flash on the iPhone 7, despite the number you might think. I think Microsoft's dynamic exposure and dynamic flash and rich HDR, I think they're just stunningly done in terms of how it's all blended together. I know we have to wait 10 seconds after taking a shot in low light. I snap Rafe Blanford drinking a beer, and then I have to wait 10 seconds while it adds finishing touches before I see the final photograph. But it's worth waiting that 10 seconds because it's a much better photograph. And hopefully you can see that in the comparison drops in the article. And again, Rafe, I have to thank you for your wonderful comparator, which makes it very easy, really, to just swipe between the results from both phones. So in summary, the iPhone 7, I would say, is a very good 2016 camera, one of the best in the world. But the 950, Lumia 950 and 950 XL by extension, I think they're still world beaters.
Yeah, I think that's right. And I think a lot of this comes down to the processing, and particularly when you look at some of the, what we always refer to as the edge cases, where it's a slightly challenging composition for light or for some other reason. Now, there are some places where the iPhone 7 does very well. And in your one, there's a picture of the Bayer tapestry. And actually, the iPhone 7 clearly comes out ahead there. And it's actually kind of one of those use cases where we've seen Lumia be a little bit weak before. But then you look at what I would perhaps call some more real world shots, where you're taking close-ups in lighting conditions or shooting it, you know, into the sky and things like that, and it is noticeable that the Lumia does better here. You know, I think this really does come down to the processing and some of the choices that are made about how you do these things rather than the hardware, because I think there's, you know, I think if you look into it in a bit more detail, there's probably less to choose between them. If anything, maybe the iPhone 7 has a bit of advantage there, you know, partly reflecting the fact that it's coming onto the market a year after the 950 XL. But it surprises me that, you know, when you look at these things in detail, and it's not looking at them kind of zoomed out, it's when you do kind of what we always talk about as Steve's pixel peeping, actually some of the differences come out and are quite obvious. But it is worth saying again, I mean, we've said this several times recently, that you actually really need to be looking closely to see some of the differences, because they're both fantastically capable devices. And, you know, gone is the era where you could see really big differences. I, you know, obviously, actually shooting the images is only one part of the experience now, and arguably the iPhone then allows you to do more things with them. The kind of the imaging purists will be slightly horrified, because, you know, they do, you know, downgrade images as they get sent off to some social service or wherever else. But even if you're looking at kind of the pure photography services, where, you know, something like 500 pixels or, you know, whatever your preferred services, generally getting to do things on the iPhone I think arguably has an advantage, just because of that whole ecosystem play. But if you're really interested in taking the best photos in as many conditions as possible, it's kind of clear to me that the 950 still has a bit of an edge there, and that really speaks to, you know, just how far ahead or how advanced Microsoft you know, imaging team was, because certainly the, you know, the team behind the iPhone are no slouches. I suspect it's perhaps, you know, because of the way we look at them, we probably give the advantage more to the Lumia phone than most people would. And partly that maybe reflects the history of the site, but also, you know, the philosophy that we take about our camera phones, I think, marries quite closely with what we heard from the Lumia team. Whereas, you know, iPhone, no denying, it produces some amazing images. It's just doing so to a different set of conditions and a different set of constraints. And I think that becomes very obvious when you look at kind of the next bit of the comparison you did on the iPhone 7 Plus and looking at zooming.
Yeah, absolutely. I was actually quite excited by the 7 Plus, and you could understand why, with my history with the Nokia 808 and Lumia 1020, this was doing zooming in a different way. It was thinking totally outside the box, and we'd seen other companies do dual cameras, but they always chickened out of doing anything really exciting. They basically either went with wide angle or messed around with one being a black and white sensor, and then, so you can take monochrome images, or having two cameras so you can do fancy depth of field effects, which is cool and gimmicky, but ultimately, when is the novelty going to wear off from that? Whereas having a genuine optical zoom lens in a smartphone, as we've seen with previous devices, with the Samsung Galaxy K Zoom, I don't know if you remember that monstrosity. It was rather big, and the lens extends by about 4 inches from the back of the phone. It's all rather crazy. But to do it in a solid state, thin device without losing quality is really impressive. That's why the Nokia 808, okay, that wasn't exactly thin, but the 1020 got thinner, and I'm picking up my 1020 now, and it's not that thick. Considering what's inside it, the monster camera and that lossless 2.5x zoom in the stills mode, and the iPhone gets 2x genuine optical zoom by switching to that separate lens. At the full 12 megapixel sensor inside. Now, the caveats are that the sensor is smaller, as well as 1/3.6 inches, and you lose aperture because obviously you've got a narrower field of view, and everything has to be smaller and tighter and narrower in terms of optics. So it's only an f/2.8 aperture. But basically, what that means is you can take in good light to excellent light, you can take some stunning 12 megapixel 2x losslessly zoom shots, which I think is really impressive in the form factor and a genuine competitor for the things like the 1020 from days past. And to me, the way I think of it is what Nokia would have done with imaging if they'd been allowed to extend into 2016. It's the sort of technical breakthrough and the set of compromises and choices that Apple have made that Nokia would have made if they carried on. And that I wish that Microsoft, with its ex-Nokia staff, would also have carried on. As it is, Microsoft got the 950 XL, which is a pretty darn excellent camera, and think, okay, well, let's just rest on our laurels and we'll keep this camera module going forward if there is a Surface phone in 2017. But Apple seemed to have just gone that extra step, the sort of step that Nokia's engineers might have taken, and this sort of technological leap has led them with a really excellent camera.
Yeah, and I think, the point that you make there, it's a technological leap, and that's kind of reflecting in the scores themselves. I mean, again, usual caveat about them being somewhat subjective, but the 950 with 31 out of 50, the 7 Plus with 44 out of 50, and this is for Zoom specifically, the 1020 was 42 out of, yeah, of 50. Those are kind of reflective of almost a generational or a technology leap. And yet, of course, the way the iPhone 7 has done it is quite different to what the 1020 and the kind of the oversampling did. And of course, the understated benefit of this is you can actually do it without having a kind of a thicker module or a big camera module. Now, it's still taking up a lot of space. And there are some other reasons to do it. It'll be interesting to see whether Apple in time uses the fact that it's got the two cameras to do some more interesting things other than kind of this zoom, potentially around depth perception and everything else. So I wonder if there's more to come in that sense. And just as we kind of saw, the software and the processing abilities of some of the Lumia devices improve over time, there's potentially we could see something similar with the iPhone. Apple don't have the history of doing that, but kind of that does intrigue me. But also going back to what I was saying in the previous part of the podcast, this does reflect, a decision that's been very specifically made to focus on a particular use case. And zooming is one of those things that I think, the rise of camera phones is kind of, people forgot just how much they used to do it on the Happy Snap cameras, because obviously with those kind of devices, it was much easier to kind of put a mechanical zoom in. And, most, even the kind of the lower end had 2 or 3x zoom, and sometimes you got the super zoom cameras, which would do anything up to 10 to 15 times zoom. And obviously then, going up to the big lenses on the DSLR, you get something else again. Obviously, by comparison, the camera phones have been quite weedy, and even we're talking about a 2x telephoto lens effectively on the iPhone. But it does bring back some of that ability to kind of frame and create an interesting image that you haven't had before. And we said the same thing about the 1020, almost being able to pick out things. And there we actually talked about, you take things on full mode and then actually just pick out a portrait of the image. Yeah. The iPhone lets you do something similar essentially. And of course, that means you don't maybe have to move about to, you know, to frame the image to get what you want. And yes, as Steve says, there's absolutely trade-offs to using this as opposed to actually moving yourself around. But of course, you know, in that kind of quick capture the moment ethos, this is absolutely what lands here. And so I think Apple have decided that this is important. They've obviously put a lot of effort into developing this. It's kind of a shame that they perhaps haven't concentrated on some of the other areas quite so much, where we've seen, you know, the Lumia devices do really well in the past. I mean, you kind of identified, Steve, kind of low light as one of them, or the use of the flash and things like that. But I suspect this Zoom one is, you know, I think Apple are very canny with the way they look at this. I suspect this is actually one that is used more of the time and therefore more popular and therefore has more of an impact. I think, you know, if there was any criticism I could make of the Lumia imaging team is sometimes they favored kind of what was kind of technically elegant over what was, you know, pleasing to the consumer. And that actually went right into the processing as well, where early on there was certainly a favor for the neutral thing. That won them a lot of fans, certainly won them my heart in one sense, because it's what I wanted. But I do sometimes wonder whether it was the right thing to do purely from a commercial point of view. Probably controversial to say that, but I think Apple perhaps understands the market and the demands of what people want from their camera phone. Yeah. And I suspect on most people's list, Zoom would be at the top of the list.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. For example, the Nokia engineers in the Lumia 1020, they put in this reframing system, as you say, the dual capture, whereby, you know, technically elegant, you have the full frame underneath, you have a 5-megapixel oversample pure version. Then if you want to, you can reframe it and you can pluck out a different 5-megapixel image, or you know, blow it up slightly. You can do all sorts of fancy subsequent crops and edits after the fact, long after you've taken the photograph. Whereas, but I say that technically was very elegant in terms of software, in terms of making the most of the mechanical hardware and the optics and the physics and so forth. But absolutely no one understood it. I spent almost every single time I brought up the subject of reframing and talking about the Lumia 1020 on our beloved site, every single time someone would get the wrong end of the stick in the comments. And I'd have to explain reframing and how it worked all over again. Basically, it was a feature that was just incredibly clever and worked incredibly well. And no one understood how to use it. They didn't even know they could do that reframing. It broke my heart sometimes.
Exactly. And subsequently, they corrected that with rich capture and this idea that you could basically have some of the benefits of lots of processing without kind of being aware of it. And it was always my view that you needed to basically make it so it was all fully automatic. It just happened in the background. But of course, to get there, you needed to still needed the technical elegance, but you then needed something on top of that to recognize what kind of mode to put it into. And, you know, rich capture, I think, particularly with the way that sometimes it would be using the flash, sometimes it would be using multiple exposures to kind of get the best possible result. And Steve's alluded to the kind of 10-second processing time. I mean, in one sense, perhaps that's not the most pleasing to the consumer, because the most pleasing version is something you get an immediate result from. Again, personally, I really like the way they did rich capture, and I think that was probably the right balance between sort of technical elegance and kind of consumer expectation. But, you know, the same could be said about something like the 808, which was an amazing device, and I can still remember it being announced and everyone being really taken aback and getting my hands on it for the first time and just thinking, this is just such a massive leap forward. But of course, in some ways, it was a specialist device. It was for, you know, the users who were really into their camera phone. And I think what's to me so remarkable about the iPhone 7 is actually its brilliance in the camera department without actually sacrificing anything else. And the 808 and even the 1020 arguably, you know, did sacrifice something, you know, with those big camera modules, with the kind of the impact on the overall physical design of the device. And sure, you've kind of got the two lenses, but in terms of, you know, impact on the iPhone, so it really isn't having it. And you know, that's where I think Apple deserve an enormous amount of credit. I suspect it's, you know, not technically quite as groundbreaking as some of what Nokia did in the past. I mean, you commented in a couple of articles, Steve, that this technology has actually been shipped around by a couple of suppliers. It was kind of a well-understood technique. But Apple deserve credit for, you know, getting it to the market, especially when you consider the scale at which the iPhone ships. So, you know, many more people will benefit from this particular technical innovation than ever benefited from something like the 808 or even the more mainstream 1020.
Yeah, absolutely. You can tell why, you can see why I leave imaging to last in these podcasts, Rafe, because as soon as you or I get talking about smartphone imaging, then that's in a good 20 minutes gone. So,
absolutely.
But we are completely out of time. I will say goodbye. Thank you very much for listening to this Insight podcast, and hopefully we'll be back next week.
Yeah, and a thank you from me as well. Thanks as ever for listening. Always interested to hear your feedback, and please remember to tune in next time.